Hello, everybody. I am Bill Buckmaster. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show. It's Tuesday, July 30th, 2013. Hope you're having a good day. Buckmaster live each weekday, 12:04 to 1, right here on AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's intelligent voice. Make it very easy for you to hear the program at your desk. We live stream the show, buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com. And our wonderful producer, Rosemary Bratt, is great about posting the program, usually within a half hour of its conclusion, to our website for the podcast, buckmastershow.com, or tucsoncitizen.com picks up the podcast, as does tucsonsentinel.com, and our thanks to those folks over there. During this noon hour, we'll begin with a newsmaker interview with Colonel Martha McSally, who is strongly considering another run for Congress. 20 minutes past the hour, we'll talk with certified financial planner Shelley Fishman with his Tuesday Moneymaker Report. I saw Shell briefly. He had a decent smile on his face, which is usually indicative that the Dow Jones Industrial Average is going north on the upside, so that's good news. We'll find out how things are going. 30 past the hour, the president of the Arizona Board of Regents will join us, and we'll close out the show with Mitch Tobin, environmental contributor to the Buckmaster Show. Mitch also runs now this fine website, ecowest.com, and we'll be talking about what can be done to prevent these horrible forest fires. What should the Forest Service policy be concerning controlled burns and the like? If you have a question or comment, 790-2040, the Buckmaster Show live liner. We also have a very active Facebook page, Bill Buckmaster, parentheses, Buckmaster Show. Colonel McSally, you have a very active Facebook page, too. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. Glad to be back, Bill.
Thanks for being a friend on Facebook.
Sure. We need all the friends we can get in this world.
There you go. As we continue to grow our presence, it is a great way to promote the show by telling who the guests are. So
right.
It's a very simple way to do that. Martha McSally, of course, is the first female fighter pilot to fly in combat and the first to command a fighter squadron in combat in United States history. I'm going to begin right off of that about there's a lot of concern I'm hearing more and more, Martha, about Davis Mountain Air Force Base. I guess We have another one of these BRAC. I'm not exactly sure what BRAC is.
Base Realignment and Closure.
That's the acronym for that.
Yep.
That's coming up in 2015. I'm hearing folks concerned because of the F-35 going up to Luke. What will the mission then be for DM?
And we should be concerned. I mean, DM is the home of the A-10. Anybody who goes through A-10 training comes through Davis-Monthan Air Force Base. Plus, it has one operational squadron, which is the one I commanded. It can deploy anywhere in the world on 24 hours notice. But the A-10 is going to be replaced by the F-35. So there's also EC-130s and other missions on the base there, but they are not tied so much to this location as the A-10s are, because the capabilities we have, the Barry-Goldwater range and the weather, and actually working with the assets at Luke and other places with Fort Huachuca, makes us an incredible national asset for, you know, fighter and combat training. And since Tucson has shown itself, unfortunately, to be unfriendly to the F-35 coming here, and the Air Force has a lot of options out there, they have more bases than they want to choose from, we definitely are in jeopardy for Davis-Monthan being considered something that can we can gain some savings. So we really need somebody who understands the value that we have there and fights for its capability to remain here, not just for the value of our community and the economic impact, but also for our nation.
You think it's going to be an issue with you and Mr. Barber?
It should be an issue. I hope the voters care about that, and they're making a thoughtful analysis of who has the best capability and characteristics and background in order to actually fight for Davis-Monthan and fight for our community and fight for this asset. I mean, I've got firsthand experience commanding a squadron that had to be ready to deploy anywhere in the world in 24 hours notice. I can speak personally about the impact.
I mean, you know DM.
I know DM. I know the Barry Goldwater Range. I understand the impact of the weather and the airspace and everything that brings us to be a national asset. And I don't need talking points from a staffer to explain that to me.
Let's go to Matthew on the Buckmaster Show live line, because this is on topic about DM. Go ahead, Matthew. You're with Colonel Martha McSally.
Hi, Martha. Thank you for taking my call, Bill. You know, I spoke to Mike Varney because he called in yesterday on the John C. Scott show to say that he had just received a briefing from a three-star that's working with the Arizona Commerce Authority on DM. Were you aware of that?
Bill was just mentioning it
to
me,
actually.
Yeah, we're
trying to get him on the show here, Matthew, to talk about that. I guess he had a message about DM. Go ahead, Matthew.
When I talked to him on the phone afterwards, after the show, and I brought up the issue. I was in Senator Blake's office a few weeks back, and I brought this up as well. I keep trying to bring up the issue, and I know Martha's going to understand it, of the concept of a base being designated a joint base,
yep.
i.e., Lewis McChord, you know
right.
what I'm talking about.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
And you know, you and I both know, I'm former military, that, you know, all that means is administrative issues from taking care of maintenance.
Right,
and
civil
all
engineers, security forces, all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
It's just the gate, I mean, and a long road over at Lewis McChord. But, and we both know that, you know, Fort Lewis is an Army base, and McChord is an Air Force base, and Army people love to cross over to use
quickly,
the Air
quickly,
Force's facility.
Quickly,
so
Matthew.
How do we get the joint? I've tried to tell people we need to try and get Fort Huachuca and Davis Monson hooked into some sort of joint base so
okay.
it gets designated as a joint base. Or why can't we even use the National Guard as a concept to hook up with the 162nd
mm-hmm.
and create the concept of a joint base.
Okay.
It needs congressional, our people need to work on that.
Okay, thank you, Matthew.
Yeah, absolutely. For those who don't understand it, joint base is a great way to gain efficiencies, which we need to do right now with our budget challenges. And so I was just in San Antonio for my nephew's graduation for basic training, and they actually have 4 bases in the San Antonio area that are under Joint Base San Antonio right now. So you're able to gain efficiencies with some of the things, like I mentioned, civil engineering and security forces and other administrative stuff. So that's a great idea. I mean, Fort Huachuca is an hour and a half away, so it's not quite as conveniently located, but you could still have efficiencies in overhead and chains of command and equipment and procurement and those types of things, and that's where you really gain those efficiencies. So I think it's absolutely an option, and we need somebody who understands it and is willing to fight for it, again, from their firsthand knowledge, which is what I bring. Thanks.
Everyone is anticipating a rematch with Congressman Ron Barber. You came very, very close to unseating Mr. Barber. It was less than 1 percentage point when all
0.84%, exactly. I went to bed election night. I had 1,300 votes, and over the next 11 days, we lost. So
let's go over a couple of the issues that I'm sure are going to come up. Give us your kind of bottom line. Immigration.
Well, yeah, the bottom line on that is something needs to be done. We have got to secure our border. For those that are in our community know well that this is not just about people coming to seek a better life, but there's criminal activity. So the border must be secure. And we've got to reform our legal immigration system. It's broken. It's not working. It's not helping us economically. And so we've got to have some thoughtful, pragmatic way to move forward on that. There are concerns with the Senate bill that I think are legitimate, like throwing money at the border issue as opposed to a thoughtful, strategic approach. And what triggers are in place in order to have some of those other mechanisms happen. I think those are reasonable concerns, and I hope the House can show some common sense and pragmatism in order to make it a better bill so that we are helping our economy and we're addressing our security issues and we're able to kind of move forward as a country without this being so divisive.
Pay inequity for men and women.
Well, I've been fighting for women my whole life, as you know, and I've been an example and a pioneer and put my career on the line to fight for women's rights. So there is still a huge gap. We are not a good example to the rest of the world as far as what we're at, like 80 cents on the dollar or something. It's pretty bad. So, I mean, there's mechanisms that we need to look at, you know, federally, state, local, and then also just culturally, whether we're holding companies accountable when women are clearly not being valued at the same rate as men. Also, we need to be, in addition to that, I'm part of the Pima County Women's Commission, as we mentioned, and we need to be making sure women understand how to negotiate, you know, for a good salary for what their value is. Oftentimes, they don't come to the table with the same sort of skills as the men. And so some of those skills that they need is something I'm passionate about to make sure that they're fighting for their value. So there's legal issues, but then there's also empowering the women in order to be valued for what they bring.
If you are portrayed, and this could easily happen, the Democrats portraying you as a right-wing extremist, what will your counter-strategy be?
Well, you know, this is what they tried in the last election. It was typical out of their national playbook, right? Scare seniors, scare middle class, and scare women. The problem is they kind of, you know, maybe got away with it for a short period of time, but it just happens to not be true. So in the case of, you know, related to specifically, you know, I was lumped into the war on women. I mean, give me a break. Of all people to lump into that, it certainly doesn't apply. So, I mean, I've been fighting extremism my whole life. I've been wearing the uniform to defend our country from extremism. I am a leader who is trying to get things done, and I stepped up to run because I really felt things were broken and we needed leadership. And I think we're going to have more time this time. I know we're going to have more time for people to see me for who I really am and not for the lies and the misinformation and the scare tactics that came out of them last time.
How about shaking off the image that the Republican Party is a bunch of old white people?
Well, you know, I was just in D.C. last week. In fact, right now on CNN, I think they're airing an interview that we had, myself and three female members of the GOP, members of Congress, with a thing called Project Grow. The GOP realizes that they have some challenges. I mean, there's only 19 women in the Republican, you know, conference, which in the House, which is like, it reminded me of being in a fighter squadron when I went there for freshman orientation.
Feels familiar.
And as you know, I've asked some pointed questions to the leadership about the seriousness of really addressing this issue and being a better example and reaching out more to women. And you know, part of their response was, "Hey, we need people like you to help change this." And so, part of my conviction to really look into running again is that I want to be a part of the solution. And, you know, there were some we allowed, I believe, the other side to define the party last time in a way that was, you know, part of that war on women and all that. And the reality is the things that I believe in about, you know, giving people opportunity and fighting for middle class by ensuring they have good education and good job opportunities and the economy is growing and all that, women care about that. You know, women make most of the healthcare decisions. They usually balance in the checkbook. And so, you know, we need to be engaging with women not as some sort of coalition, but actually as the majority of voters and the electorate and the citizens of America. And so I'm committed to being a part of that solution.
Maybe my marriage has worked long enough for 42 years because Ann and I each have separate checkbooks.
Okay, well, there you go.
Yeah, there you go. Martha McSally, looks like recent polling finds you running in a virtual tie,
right,
with Ron Barber.
Yeah, 46-45 is basically a tie.
Didn't that poll say he's one of the most vulnerable congressmen?
Yes, in fact, he has been labeled that based on a rematch option with me, because he is.
All right, and for the website?
McSallyforCongress.com is our exploratory website, so you can get on that and contribute and help support us as we're trying to build our team right now in our exploratory phase in order to consider taking on another run.
Okay, Martha McSally, thanks for being with us. Have a great week.
Thanks for having me on, Bill.
All right, we've got Shelley Fishman coming up with the Tuesday Moneymaker Report. That's next.
Hey, have you noticed all the road construction in the Tucson area?
Yes, I see lots of road work.
Yeah, in fact, the Regional Transportation Authority is funding work right now for more than a dozen projects, including bus pullouts and intersections.
I sure see lots of RTA orange signs downtown and in the region.
Yeah, and I hear new RTA projects will begin soon.
Great. The RTA projects makes for better roads and safer driving for all of us.
Getting underway, the Houghton Broadway intersection. The RTA delivering our promise to you since 2006. Visit RTAmobility.com or Facebook.
Want the best care for your companion animal? Then Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson is the place for specialty vets for your special pet. With a state-of-the-art, award-winning facility, only the Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson delivers compassionate, comprehensive veterinary emergency and specialty care 24/7 in a wide range of fields. Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson at North La Cunada Drive at West River or online at vscott.com. That's VSCOT.com.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
West in La Paloma, Tucson's iconic luxury resort and spa is now better than ever with a $30 million rejuvenation that includes all guest rooms, public spaces, meeting rooms, upgraded golf and tennis, and new pool and lobby areas, plus enhanced dining. And the setting, well, it couldn't be better on 250 acres in the foothills of the Catalinas. Take a look at the rejuvenation at westinlapalomaresort.com.
Hello?
Hey, honey. Just packing and getting ready for my flight home.
Great! You didn't forget about Adam's soccer game, did you?
Hey, it's his last game of the season. I wouldn't miss it for the world.
But you land at 4. How can you be there by 5?
No problem. I'm flying into Tucson. I parked right by the terminal, and the soccer field is only 10 minutes from the airport.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost-effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word COMPARE to 51313. Fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Are you a landlord by choice or by force? Experiencing a job transfer and don't know what to do with your current house? Want to move but can't sell your current house? Hello, my name is Ken Adams, co-owner of Rincon Ventures Property Management. Rincon Ventures has a fully automated accounting process, electronic payments, and 24-hour access to your accounts. With some of the lowest rates in Tucson, Rincon Ventures has grown rapidly in this down economy. Let us show you why. Give us a call at 881-2258 right now and experience the difference. Rincon Ventures, where service is a fact, not another empty promise. 881-2258.
Shelley Fishman, CFP, is a financial services professional located at Pyramid Federal Credit Union. The opinions voiced on this program segment are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your financial advisor or tax advisor prior to investing.
Here he is, Shelley Fishman, and Shelley's a real trooper, I'll tell you. The guy's been up all night coming back from his wonderful vacation up in Vancouver and City of Vancouver and over on Victoria and Vancouver Island, but getting out of British Columbia through San Francisco. And San Francisco in the summer, for those who have lived in the Bay Area like I have, the fog is a big problem.
Yeah, stuck in San Francisco until about 1 in the morning. Finally gave up and decided to make it to Phoenix because there was a puddle jumper to Phoenix, and then drove, rented a car at 4 in the morning, came down here so I could do this show.
We really appreciate it, Shelley. I know you haven't had any sleep, but you do have some interesting observations, I'm sure, about the City of Roses, Portland, Oregon, and then up to Seattle, and the growth that is happening up in the Great Northwest.
Yeah, one of the things that always strikes me when I go elsewhere is to kind of compare. And I know you can't really compare Tucson with other places in the galaxy, but I hadn't been in Portland in a while, and I was astonished, you know, in driving in there just to see what's happened to that city, how large it has become, how friendly it has become, how well-organized things seem to be. The modern, you know, streetcar there in Portland and the public transportation, construction cranes all over the place. Really a lot of determined building and you know that doesn't happen by accident. Somebody thinks about that in advance and makes the tough decisions that are not necessarily always going to be guaranteed to pay off financially. Same thing in Seattle.
Yeah. I was just going to say about Portland before you move on to Seattle that the city officials here in Tucson like to point to Portland and they like to point to the fact that the modern streetcar up there in downtown Portland where our streetcar is being made up there in Portland. Mm-hmm. They like to point to the fact that it's really resurrected the downtown area in Portland.
Oh, it absolutely has. And the way the people in Portland view transportation and public transportation and bicycling and being outdoors, and you know, it's a wonderful environment there along the river, but what you see clearly is that somebody 20 years ago or 30 years ago made some very hard decisions about growing that city, and what was able to get the political and economic support for doing it. And that's something that I think is a lesson for us here.
You were saying about Seattle?
Same thing. Mm-hmm. I hadn't been in Seattle in a while, arrived in Seattle, and again, just to see all the construction, to see how that city has grown it is continuing to grow. And, you know, that city is somewhat limited in its growth capacities. It's bounded by mountains and the water. But nevertheless, again, very, very clear determination on the part of the people who run that city and state to make that happen.
Welcome back, Shelley. We're talking with Shelley Fishman. It is our Tuesday Moneymaker Report. I want to talk a little bit about the Fed. We keep hearing this stuff about the Fed is engineering a soft landing.
Yeah. What the Fed has been doing for the past 4 or 5 years now has presented their model with some risk, because the Fed's got two things that it's supposed to do in this world. One is to keep inflation under control, and the other is to make sure that the economy is enjoying full or as full employment as is possible. Over the lead up to this great recession, the Fed's emphasis has always been on controlling inflation. For the past 4 or 5 years, inflation hasn't been a problem, and so the Fed has been trying to stimulate the economy to grow jobs. The question now, as Bernanke comes to the end of his tenure there, is what is the emphasis going to be, and who is most likely to be nominated to do that, and what will happen? But between now and then, Bernanke has, of course—
When is then, by the way?
I believe his term is up at the end of the year.
Oh, okay.
And I think he's made it clear, though not publicly, that he doesn't want another term.
Hmm.
Now, who knows whether that's just kind of, I'm not going to get one anyway, so I'm going to say I don't want one. But what the Fed has been doing has always presented, especially for the right wing of the macro economists, has always presented a wrong-headed approach to what this economy needs.
Mm-hmm.
By overstimulating or by stimulating and by using money, if you will, to monetary policy to stimulate the economy. Everybody always knew that one of the risks of that was going to be coming off of it in such a way that you don't hockey stick, the results. And a couple of months ago, Bernanke indicated that he was going to begin to ease off some of the quantitative easing. The markets panicked for a couple of weeks. They're still not over some of that panic. And so engineering this soft landing in terms of keeping inflation under control, but at the same time not removing stimulus too fast so that the economy comes to a grinding halt, especially now that we have the sequester going on kind of simultaneously, that's going to be a difficult task for the Fed under the existing chairman and whoever follows him.
Meanwhile, 7 months into the year, we're up 18%.
Gosh.
Right? I'll take it.
Yeah, 17-18% on the Dow. But keep in mind, Bill, we've only got 1.5%. And I think we get some new figures this week in GDP growth. And so the first question you ask is, is it sustainable? Is that kind of growth in equity sustainable in a very slow-moving economy? But also, in order for unemployment to come down, we need faster GDP growth.
All right, folks, you can find out about Shelley Fishman. Shelley, what's the best way?
Buckmastershow.com. It's great. It works, and people do it.
Thank you very much. Shelley Fishman, welcome back to Tucson. You'll be probably taking a nap this afternoon.
Yeah, I think I will. Have a great week.
Have a great week. Thanks, Shelley.
Bye-bye.
The opinions voiced in this program segment are for general information only and are not necessarily those of LPL Financial, Pyramid Federal Credit Union, or this station. Shelley Fishman, CFP, is a financial planner located at Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC. Insurance products offered through LPL Financial or its licensed affiliates. Investment and insurance products are not NCUA insured, not credit union guaranteed, and may lose value.
Ready to do some antiquing? If you love a special one-of-a-kind object like I do, I strongly suggest Adobe House Antiques, specializing in early 20th century European and American art, and they have the best selection in town of antique light fixtures. Adobe House Antiques in the Jostler Design Building at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, and on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
There are a million people in metropolitan Tucson, and they have a million stories to tell. That's why there is TucsonCitizen.com, the voice of Tucson. Nearly 100 citizen journalists and bloggers, including the Buckmaster Show, report the news and provide perspective, opinion, and information about everything from local politics to the Arizona Wildcats. Visit TucsonCitizen.com today to read what you can't find in traditional media or to contact us to add your voice to the voice of Tucson, TucsonCitizen.com.
Vero Amore restaurants are known as the place for authentic wood-fired Neapolitan pizzas, plus delicious pastas, panini, salads, and more. Every flavorful dish is homemade using the finest and freshest local and imported ingredients available. Vero Amore has two locations open daily, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events.
Get back down to earth at the 2013 Silver City Clay Festival with workshops, tours, lectures, archaeological panel discussion, films, vendor fair, and three juried exhibitions with fun for the whole family. The festival kickoff event is a poker tournament fundraiser featuring genuine clay poker chips. Enjoy Clay Festival events July 27th to August 4th in Silver City, New Mexico, just 3 hours east of Tucson and 15 degrees cooler. More at clayfestival.com.
At Cox Business, we don't cook the entrees.
Order up!
But we are in the restaurant business. Just ask Kirsten Traina, co-owner of the Liberty Market Restaurant.
Power burger with cheddar.
She prefers doing business with local suppliers, including produce from a local farm, and internet and phone service from Cox Business. She counts on us for reliable internet, with speed options up to 100 times faster than basic DSL and feature-rich business phone service.
Margarita pizza!
And our award-winning local support team is available 24/7. Visit coxbusiness.com to get business internet select and phone for only $99 per month. Plus, ask about next-day professional installation.
A carrot cake!
That's for me. Switch to Cox Business today and see how your business is our business. Offer valid until 9/30/13. Prices exclude taxes and other fees and may be subject to minimum service requirements. Speed comparison based on max download speed of Cox Business Internet service 150 megabits per second versus basic DSL 1.5 megabits per second service. Other restrictions may apply. Next day install subject to availability. Eligibility restrictions may apply.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show on this Tuesday afternoon as we push toward 12:34 here on AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's intelligent voice. We're going to talk next about the University of Arizona, actually the whole university system here in Arizona. The Board of Regents, that's the board that oversees the state's public universities, has unanimously approved a $1.8 billion operating budget for the University of Arizona and its medical facilities next year. That's a 10% increase over this year's budget. We speak now on the Buckmaster Show live line to Elaine Klein, the president of the Arizona Board of Regents. Elaine, how are you today?
Good afternoon. Great, thanks.
Thanks for being with us. The 10%, is that about right for what you were expecting for the University of Arizona?
Well, we're pretty pleased that the legislature has increased its commitment. It's the first time we've really started seeing new monies being added back into the system. And most significantly, they're going to benefit the medical enterprise at the University of Arizona so that we can continue our work to improve the standing of that academic medical center, build on its certainly great success that we have today, and to continue to build out the medical schools in Arizona.
Eileen, for years, the University of Arizona and the state system really was not getting virtually the funding had pretty much come to a halt. Has that turned around now?
It really has. So we did see several years ago some very significant reductions. Obviously, the state's finances were collapsing, and so cuts were made everywhere. But the universities were among the hardest hit of all entities that are funded by the state. And so the universities lost about $400 million during the economic downturn. So it's very encouraging to see some monies being added back to the system. I don't anticipate, to be clear, that we're going to return to a day where the state, you know, funds a majority of our operations by any stretch, and the downturn certainly made us leaner and stronger. But it's very encouraging that the state recognizes that they're a critical partner in our success.
We'll be speaking with the new University of Arizona president. Dr. Hart will be our guest, Eileen, on the program on Friday, on our Friday Focus interview. And one of the things we'll be talking with her about, student tuition and fees at the University of Arizona. Where are we right now with tuition? Do you see that pretty much leveling off right now after several years of increases?
Well, there were several years of increases, and the regents, to be clear, have been very concerned about affordability and access issues. So if you go back about 10 years, our state was one where we had pretty low tuition rates, but we also had relatively low assistance in terms of financial aid. And so over the past several years, there have been significant tuition increases, but the university presidents and the regents have worked diligently to make sure that those were coupled with the opportunity to have additional financial assistance through student financial aid, so that really we're making sure that our universities are very affordable. So now, even though we are probably a more moderate tuition state, we're at the median of our peers, there is much more access to financial aid than was available before. And of course, we continue to innovate our programming and our delivery options so that students can have a variety of options to make sure that they're getting the most affordable but the highest quality education possible.
You know, the Wall Street Journal had a piece, it was actually last Friday, about at smaller universities, the class sizes, enrollment has really taken a hit. I didn't realize this, that the number of U.S. high school graduates peaked at 3.4 million in 2010-2011, is now projected to fall to 3.2 million by 2013-2014. So there are fewer people coming into the system. Isn't that true?
It is. And so we're starting to see that flattening that you're talking about. But what is really of concern is, you know, the degree to which we're increasing educational attainment overall. So this notion that we still are only graduating about 70% of our high schoolers, and depending on, you know, various demographics, the numbers could be much worse. It's just a challenge our state has to address. So obviously we're directly impacted because we count on those students and we look forward to educating those students. But when you step back and look at this from a state perspective, we absolutely have to drive up the number of high school graduates. We have to continue to increase educational attainment in this state, because two-thirds of the jobs in the future are going to require some level of higher education. So it's not necessarily that we don't have people coming in. It's whether they are successful in completing high school and whether they have the ability to move on to the university.
We really have to do something about this high school dropout situation. It just continues to grow. The problem grows, and I just don't know what the solution is. Eileen, do you?
Well, I think it is imperative that our state, you know, really continue to work on this very diligently. I'm encouraged that over the past several years, the state has formed, for the first time, if you can believe it, one set of common goals, and they are very much centered on, around making students successful, increasing the graduation rate, no longer accepting 70% as an acceptable rate for our state, but saying that we need to be graduating, if not 100%, at least, you know, 95% of the students who come into our K-12 system, and that when they leave, that they're prepared with the skills they need to be successful in the workforce and the skills they need to be successful at our community colleges and at our universities. So it's one of the top policy imperatives for our state, and it was never more clear than during this downturn when you saw who was able to keep their job. It was largely people with college educations and those who did not keep their job. And so from, you know, making sure that individuals are successful, you know, as people, which is incredibly important, and in thinking about our state's economy, there isn't much more that should rise to the top of the agenda than getting our kids successfully through high school.
And they need a high school diploma, as evidenced by this new report of the State Department of Administration here, showing that 3/4 of job openings expected over the next 2 years will require, you'll have to have at least a high school diploma.
It's correct. I mean, it's absolutely true. And so, you know, I'm encouraged. I think that you have statewide leadership through the Arizona Ready Council, and obviously our entire school community is very focused on this. But I'm encouraged that we have this alignment of goals. That's important. You know, I think people are accepting that we need to raise our expectations in terms of outcomes. The state has really coalesced around higher standards, and they have been championed by a number of educators, which is really encouraging. And that will make a very big difference in the skills that our students are able to develop as they're in school and help move them along so that they can graduate. But it is important that we make sure, you know, as early as middle school, that we're really focused on these students' success and getting them the classes they need and also the support that they need so that they can make it through successfully.
Eileen Klein is with us. She is the president of the Arizona Board of Regents. That board oversees the state's public universities. I know the board has been concerned, Eileen, recently about the overall student experience. There have been some really highly publicized incidents. I think those happened up at ASU concerning some of these were alcohol-fueled incidents concerning fraternities. That's a concern, isn't it, to the board right now?
Yes, absolutely. Student safety is a big concern for the board, and I really applaud them for wanting to take on this issue. And let's face it, it's a great privilege to be able to attend one of our state's universities. Our taxpayers are supporting these institutions, and our families need to be assured that their kids are not just going to get a quality education while they're there, but they're going to have a very safe and secure experience as students, and one that really contributes to their growth as individuals and doesn't harm them. So we wanted to reach out to fraternity organizations nationally to talk to them about this, really just to start a dialogue, to say, what can we do collectively? Because we know they care about their members, and that their members are students, and we care about them as well. And so what could we do together to make sure that we can strengthen the student experience and keep students safe? So we want to encourage students to have healthy experiences while they're on campus, and we're convinced that we have a lot of organizations and fraternities and sororities who really want to work with us to that end.
And school will be starting very soon, right?
Yes, we're looking forward to it. Everybody's gearing up.
School starts in August at the University of Arizona, so that will be coming up very soon. And by the way, those letters to national headquarters went out to nearly 70 fraternities and sororities outlining safety concerns. So this was just about all of the major Greek organizations were involved there, correct?
Correct. And so we've invited them to, you know, work with us if they want to write back, certainly, but we want to be sure somehow we are able to communicate with them. And I think that's just one great example of where this is a new day for Regents. I mean, you're going to see them speaking out on more of issues that are of statewide concern. So student safety is clearly, and security is right within their bailiwick as Regents overseeing this system, but they're also concerned about big public policy issues as well. And so I'm hoping that you're going to see a, you know, a reinvigorated Board of Regents that is known for really caring about not just our universities, but for our state as a whole.
Do you have some new board members coming on? Or I know they rotate every so often. What's...
They do. And a regent's term is 8 years, so it's a significant commitment. But
yeah.
When you think about it, you know, this is a, we have a $4.5 billion budget, and we oversee some of the most strategic assets of the state. So it's a really important job, and it takes a while to get immersed. And so we have a rotation, and within the next year, we'll have two more positions that will be coming open, and everybody will be awaiting eagerly the governor's picks. You know, these are highly coveted positions, and really it requires someone who has the commitment to really dedicate to overseeing the operations and being willing to play this very large statesmanlike role to be able to advance the state and its economy.
Certainly a critical board in the state of Arizona. Eileen Klein, president of the Arizona Board of Regents, thanks for spending a few minutes with us.
Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot. Eileen Klein with us on the Buckmaster Show. Coming up now on 1245 on AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice. When we come back, we're going to be talking about fire suppression. The burning question, I guess, about controlled burns. Is that the way to go? Mitch Tobin, the Buckmaster Show environmental contributor, is next.
Widened and improved roads, new bike lanes, sidewalks, pedestrian crossings, and bus pullouts. Many of these safety improvements are funded by the Regional Transportation Authority through its 20-year plan, which is making a difference in our lives.
Hi, I'm Lori. I live near the Twin Peaks Interchange. Since that new interchange and road opened, life has become a whole lot simpler. The new road saves me time, and it's a beautiful drive. I love it.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you since 2006. Visit rtamobility.com or Facebook.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Organization, Tucson Wildlife Center, is in the midst of a capital campaign to build Arizona's first state-of-the-art hospital for wildlife. The facility will help staff and volunteers care for nearly 1,000 raptors and mammals it receives each year at its Far East Side facility. To donate online, go to TucsonWildlife.com. For more information about wildlife rescue, visit the website or call 290-WILD.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our neighbors realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and build a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's PCC students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a smart, thriving Tucson and Pima County. Our region has not been immune to the unprecedented economic challenges of the past few years. During this time, PCC has prided itself on offering crucial programs and services at an extremely affordable price. We remain one of Arizona's best education bargains. With your ongoing support, we look forward to embarking on new directions and building new community connections that ensure the people of Pima County will prosper today and in the future. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soup, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show, 1248, this portion presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, where the big week, this is it, the Silver City Clay Festival, with all the vendor fairs, juried exhibitions, all sorts of activities, workshops, anything to do with clay. It's happening right now in Silver City, just 3 hours east of Tucson and 15 degrees cooler. And the Silver City Clay Festival runs through this weekend. You can stay at a variety of really nice accommodations, including Georgetown Cabins, Gila Hot Springs Ranch, and Faywood Hot Springs, to name a few. You can find out more about the Clay Festival and southwestnewmexico.org. And again, their website, southwestnewmexico.org. We welcome now to the Buckmaster Show, a live line, the Buckmaster Show contributor on the environment. He is Mitch Tobin, former Arizona Daily Star and Tucson Citizen reporter, author of Endangered, which shows why so many species are at risk of extinction. His newest creation, ECO, E-C-O, West, .org, his new website. Mitch, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Bill. It's good to be with you.
It's good to be with you, and I know you've been really talking a lot and on your website about the disaster, really the 19 firefighters that shocked everybody, that horrible disaster in Arizona. Is it take something like this, Mitch Tobin, to really turn things around when it comes to looking for solutions to our situation with wildfires?
Well, I think because this event was so catastrophic, I mean, 19 firefighters dying in one event is really unheard of in modern times, that it's generated so much attention and interest in the wildfire issue that it may be a moment in which we really do some serious thinking and take action in terms of dealing with the wildfire issue. It seems pretty clear that wildfires are growing larger and that climate change is making the problem worse, that we have more homes in the wildland-urban interface. And so it seems like it's a pretty clearly a problem that's getting worse, and this disaster is sort of symptomatic of that. And often it seems that it takes a national-level tragedy to force change on these issues, because it's something that does raise consciousness and gets people talking about it.
And climate change certainly is a player in this, isn't it, Mitch Tobin?
Yeah, there have been a number of studies that have shown that the warming that we've already experienced in the West, we're not talking about the future, we're talking about looking back over the past few decades, has led to a lengthening of the fire season and a worsening of the fire season. And so the projections are for places like Arizona to become not only hotter, but drier. And so if there's less of a snowpack over the winter, that makes it more likely that there's going to be a dangerous fire season in the spring and summer to come.
How has your snowpack been in your summer rains up in Colorado, your home base now?
Well, you know, we're on the sort of edge of the North American monsoon that you guys in Tucson get much more strongly. So we've actually had a little bit of rain here in Colorado that's given a tad of relief to the drought, but really not very much to change the overall picture. I was just looking at the U.S. Drought Monitor, which tracks conditions across the country, and basically every state in the West, aside from Montana and Washington State, has some form of drought going on. And in some places like New Mexico, it's pretty severe.
You know, we talked when the website was first launched a couple of months ago, ecowest.org, about your creation. How is it going so far? I mean, it looks like you've got, first of all, the first thing that jumps out at me, Mitch, you've got some fantastic, easy to understand graphics on the website.
Thank you. Yeah, the whole idea was to try to break down these issues into data visualizations that are easy to understand. And with something like fires, we actually have really good data in terms of the number of fires, the number of acres burned, sadly, the number of wildland firefighters that have been killed. And so the idea behind EcoWest is to try to gather all of these environmental metrics and trends in one place, focused on the North American West, so that we can understand how the West is changing and be able to put events like the Yarnell Hill fire in context And, you know, we're talking about the sixth most deadly incident for all firefighters in the United States, and the most lost since 9/11. So it's truly a historic event. And so we have some resources on the website that track what's happening with wildland firefighters, the suppression efforts in terms of the number of air tankers and fire engines, as well as, you know, the basic numbers in terms of the number of acres burned and where fires are burning in the West.
You trained, as I recall, didn't you, about 10 years ago, went through the wildfire or wildland fire training, Mitch Tobin?
I did, along with a couple of other reporters and photographers at the Arizona Daily Star. We did that in 2002, which turned out to be, at least at the time, the worst year on record when we had the big Rodeo Chedisky fire, for example. And so we went through the week-long training in order to get the certification, what's known as the red card, so that we could embed, so to speak, with the fire crews. So it was a really great experience in terms of learning the business of wildland firefighting and how fires behave. And as part of that, we would sometimes actually fly over the fires, usually in a propeller plane, sometimes a helicopter, mostly so that the photographers could get some imagery. And it really, you know, strikes you when you see a big fire like that burning, just how enormous these fires have become and how difficult it is for us to stop them despite the very valiant efforts of firefighters. So those images have definitely stuck with me. And, you know, from that experience, it seemed very clear that safety is taken very, very seriously among firefighters, and I know it's a close-knit community, so I'm sure people are just devastated about this loss.
Yeah, it really was a shocking loss in the news today that the Arizona State Forestry Division, the deputy director, is saying that the hotshot leader perhaps violated safety protocols in that fire. That's coming out, that news today, that the crew chief broke some of the rules and put the people at risk. I'm not exactly sure what rules were broken, but that news is coming out today. When you first heard about that, I mean, what were some of your first thoughts about the fire?
Well, when I saw that the number was 19, I mean, it was just shock because it's such a large number of firefighters to lose in one incident. I mean, that's roughly how many we've lost in recent years in the entire country per year. And so it was really shocked because it seems like safety is taken so seriously and the hotshots are, you know, the elite of the elite. But, you know, it's just an inherently dangerous business, and having spent a little bit of time embedding with the crews, you can see that. I mean, something as simple as driving around at night in a smoky, forested area can be very dangerous. And if you look at the statistics, actually, although, you know, a fair number of firefighters die in a burnover, which is what happened in this case, a lot of them die in things like vehicle accidents, just because it's a dangerous environment, very dynamic, difficult to see, and a lot of tired people trying to save homes and get the fire under control.
Talk a little bit about what is kind of the burning question in the whole fire suppression business right now with wildland fires. Can controlled burns and logging stop deadly megafires? I have in front of me a copy of the Nature Conservancy. They put out a really fine magazine. This is their July-August issue. It's their cover story, and they say the answer to that question, Mitch Tobin, is yes. What do you say?
So the key thing is that fire is natural in many parts of the West, especially in the forests of Arizona and the Southwest. And so the problem is that there hasn't been enough fire in these places, and the fuel has built up. And so it seems like there's a pretty broad agreement and consensus that things like prescribed fires and controlled burns can reduce fuel loads and can allow us to burn areas under our own terms rather than letting a wildfire do it when the behavior might become very extreme. It threatens homes, threatens people's lives. And so part of that, these thinning projects usually require some amount of, the prescribed burn projects usually require some amount of thinning to prevent the fire from going over control lines. And there's also separate projects that try to remove hazardous fuels mechanically with chainsaws. I mean, large-scale logging could actually potentially increase the fire risk if you were to lead to a proliferation of much smaller, more flammable trees. But there seems to be a consensus among land managers and foresters and firefighters and environmentalists that in places like the Southwest, judicious use of thinning and prescribed burns is really necessary in order to restore the natural conditions of something like a ponderosa pine forest, which naturally, because of lightning, would have burned a couple of times a decade, maybe. And so if you let decades go by without any fire, you're just going to get a huge amount of fuel that can potentially turn into an unstoppable canopy or crown fire.
Okay, Mitch Tobin, we're going to have to run. Again, it's ecowest.org, your website. Thanks, Mitch, for being with us.
Thank you, Bill. Take care.
Thanks a lot. Bottled water on the Buckmaster Show. Supplied by Culligan. Better water, pure and simple. Culligan for all your residential and commercial water needs. Thank you, Culligan, for supplying a cool bottle of Culligan to all of our in-studio guests on the Buckmaster Show. Our friend John C. Scott, the Dean of Local Talk, comes up this afternoon from 3 to 5. Then Wake Up Tucson with Chris and Joe. They will be in this very studio tomorrow morning from 6 to 8. I am Bill Buckmaster. Have a great afternoon.
Intelligent Talk 24/7, AM 1030, KVOI, Cortero, Tucson. On the web at KVOI.com.